The following is the audio version of a video released at peakprosperity.com. Visit peakprosperity.com to watch the video and to find other insightful content such as articles, discussion forums, and exclusive subscriber-only content.
I wish that it was something that we could vote our way out of, but it almost seems inevitable that there is going to be this merger of tech and state.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Peak Prosperity podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about a really big topic, maybe two topics, but the big one is digital IDs. We all know they're coming, and we know that the system sees us in ways that perhaps we're not all comfortable with, but what can you do about it, and how can we possibly get ourselves prepared for life under a digital ID? To talk with us about that today is the founder and CEO of a company called Above Phone. It's a de-Googled device. We'll learn about that and also take back your tech. Did I get that right, Hakeem?
Yes, perfect. Chris, great to be here with you.
It's so good to be here with you. And of course, you know, we met each other in the first time at the Peak Prosperity Summit in New Hampshire, and it's just been a great relationship so far. So I want to talk about what you can offer to people in terms of this, but let's start here. I feel like there's an inevitability to this sort of digital surveillance state. In fact, I don't even know how powerful it is, but I have hints at it because we've all had the experience of just mentioning something to our partner and then seeing an ad show up on our phone. We've had the experience of noticing that if we're on X, like I am all the time, that if you get over a certain target, you get swarmed by bots who really have you dialed in. And their whole goal, as far as I can tell, is to distract, anger, engage, comment slide, whatever. Their job is to just sort of muddy the waters and get you off the topic, right? So just a couple of examples. So let's start there. Like, how surveilled is the average person who has a smartphone and a computer?
They're unbelievably surveilled. And it goes past what the great thinkers like George Orwell could have predicted in his book, 1984. I don't think he predicted that they would start reading our brainwaves, but that's the new frontier we're approaching. So when it comes to surveillance,
okay,
we could get into that. So I have been following online privacy and surveillance for the past 5 years. I kind of made it my mission after stewarding a platform for alternative thinkers. And I had all this data in front of me. And I was like, wow, this is very valuable. How can I protect it? So I went down this rabbit hole. And so people don't realize it's many different levels of surveillance throughout all their devices. It's not just the cell networks or that their phone calls and texts aren't private, but that most of the surveillance comes from just a handful of companies, typically the companies that provide the phones and laptops. So Google, Microsoft, Apple. I don't think many people realize how much data these companies are sitting on, petabytes of data, and that it is a real-time stream. For instance, there's been independent studies on iPhones and normal Google Androids, and they're connecting back home every 5 minutes, right? So what data are they sending? They're sending unique identifiers, but there's also this open door to listening to everything you're saying, which they're still denying, by the way. But at this point, there's advertisers that are promoting that they have this ability to segment people based on what they're saying. So there's in pretty much everything you do online today, you are being surveilled. However, it happens when we give away our own authority and we just trust people to go along with it. And we stop taking responsibility for the technology we can use.
Well, I find it also impossible when we go to the next layer. It's like, let's say I get an app or the latest Microsoft 11 plus Office, right? And all of a sudden they hit you with a 80-page terms and condition, which is written by lawyers, for lawyers, of lawyers. And if you dig into that at all, I'm horrified by the things that you have to agree to, right? In some cases, it's all your contacts, all your files, full access to everything. In the case of, it was TikTok or was it Instagram? They, in the terms and conditions, I think it was Instagram, was like, oh, we have the right to surveil anything on your home network. That includes all other devices that didn't sign this TNC. It feels like that's too much. I mean, can anybody, A, really read through all of those T's and C's? And second of all, even if you disagreed with them, what do you do?
Yeah, I mean, you have to kick this stuff out to the curb. I think 2 years ago, when the Alexa privacy was starting to become thing, you know, those smart speakers that were listening to you, and then there was whistleblowers coming out and saying, "Hey, I can listen to people making love in their homes," and all this stuff. I started a campaign for people to just junk it, right? Throw your Alexa to the curb, because that's what people need to do, is get this stuff out of their homes. Once it's in your home, it's connected to your network. Simply due to the way technology works, there's only so much you can prevent if you're using a hostile device. And that's what these devices are. I call them pre-hacked, or you could think of them as hostile, because you don't have any control. They can be they're all proprietary. They're hidden. You can't really tell what they do. You can just make educated guesses based on observations. And so, you're right. When you read these huge terms of conditions, they'll take as much as they can feasibly get. As a software engineer, like I know this. I used to work on mobile apps, and I knew w what services you had access to on the phone. And it's basically, if you ask, so any app you download online, there might be 10 to 30 companies also attached in the code of that app. And when you give them a permission, when you give the app a permission, I mean, by proxy, all those companies also get that same permission. So it's a dangerous game we're playing when all these private companies, they have partnerships or even subsidiaries, and they can share the data between these companies. So that's how this data economy, the surveillance economy, grows. And at the end of the day, all this data gets packaged and cleaned up to make it easy to search through, to make it easy to put people into buckets. And then it can be sold to advertisers, or advertising platforms can be built on top of it. Now, the more insidious thing is when it gets sold to governments and law enforcement, and you can just completely sidestep our constitutional rights.
That's, yeah, fascinating. So two things about that. First, I remember reading a few months ago, came and went, that actually they could detect now where you are in your home based on perturbances of the Wi-Fi signals. Did you look into that at all?
Yeah, this is, there have been several studies. This goes back more than 10 years, I want to say. And you know, the army has technology like this where they can set up a grid of transmitters, and they can basically detect as the Wi-Fi, or as the radio waves move through a building, kind of where people are, because we absorb, you know, we're water-based, we're organic, so we do absorb it, and we create disturbances in the field. And I would, you know, I don't think that routers are all doing that right now. It is more like what an attacker would use. But if as our routers get more and more powerful, and in fact, I mean, what do you call it? Comcast already has this technology. So do a few other routers, right? It's like the security feature of the router, the motion sensor. So you have two devices in your house, and they can detect, hey, there's motion going on in your house. So that's an aspect of the technology that's finally making it to the consumer market. So the more people need to realize, like, when you get a router through Xfinity or Comcast, you have the option to bring your own. And you do have the option to bring your own technology into a lot of what we do. So it's just about realizing that, hey, if I don't control this device, what type of weapon can they build on top of it?
You know, I went down that path, and so a friend of mine, Tom, he's very technically gifted. So he built me a WRT router, and then I just got a little stripped down cable modem that has like almost no features. It's just like cable in, a WAN line out the back end. But then this other thing is built on Linux, and so I've got the Comcast router modem combo sitting on a shelf right now, just because I didn't know what else to do besides unplug it and start over.
That was a very smart choice. You save on rental fees, and you also have to realize these internet service providers, it's so valuable to know what websites you're visiting throughout the day, right? There's a lifetime value of being able to take your information and that terms of service, like you sign up to this, they can sell, take your information and sell it to advertisers. So that's what every technology company nowadays is doing. That's the play, to capture as much data as possible and feed it into an advertising network, because that's ongoing data. And it's kind of insidious, because they turn around and then they sell that data again to, if you have a company, you know, you want to find the most valuable customer, the most ideal customer. So that's kind of how it always gets used. And so I've seen this in the I've studied this in the phone environment, how the operating system, the apps in mobile communications, phone calls and texts, they're not private at all. How there's 20-year-old programs logging everything, every call and text message. And the answer I've came to is we need to be replacing every piece of technology in our homes. And there is a way to do it, and that there is a there is tech that works. It's not just an alternative, but it's actually better than big tech in function and privacy and all those things.
Now, here's what's going to happen. So and this relates to the second point I wanted to make is I'll put this interview, it's going to go up on YouTube amongst, you know, we put it up on Rumble and Odyssey and up on X and all that. But on, let me tell you about my experience on YouTube. So during COVID, I did a lot of reporting and I got flagged somehow in their system as an enemy of the state or whatever, right? Because I was just trying to like share basic information. That still follows me. I have a guy who's got a deep license on the back end and he just says, wow, you are persona non grata within that ecosystem right now because they participated with the U.S. government and also with these corporate partnerships, like, say, with pharma companies. At any rate, I wasn't tagged because of anything I was doing that was not helpful or arguably or defensively harmful. It was that I was pissing off somebody who had a different narrative or a profit motive that they wanted to run. So here's why I'm interested in this, because, OK, let's say I don't really mind that. OK, I sort of shrug my shoulders. They know, you know, which websites I like to visit, and okay, fine. It's the other thing you said. When they share this with governments or with corporations that basically have government-like powers, now all of a sudden, I'm in a dystopian nightmare, potentially, if they decide to turn that eye of Sauron against me, right? And we've seen people really get clobbered for this, and hey, this is being recorded under a Trump administration. I know in my heart of hearts, if this was a Kamala Harris administration, I'm not even sure we could have this conversation at this point based on the trends that were in play under the Biden administration, which felt to me like if you didn't hold the orthodoxy of the right narrative, you got shadow banned or even outright banned or worse.
It's quite possible. And I think when you look at, you know, either side of partisan politics, there's always your flavor of the in-group and out-group. And definitely were experiencing that. I mean, Biden got to usher in this, you could call it the algorithm ghetto, as my friend Havore likes to say, where if you started to question the narrative during COVID, it was very important to clamp down on that and to contain that. And this has been something that's been going on for a long time. Some people might remember the purge in 2016, when a lot of the biggest investigative journalists and activist groups with maybe millions of subscribers on Facebook, people in their groups, that just one day overnight, hundreds of these groups got taken offline. This is millions of people that were before connected, just destroying their audience and starting it from scratch. And so it's this inherent risk that happens when, you know, we take our content and we put it on YouTube and these third party platforms, when the legal climate changes, that it could all be taken away from you. And yes, and it was very scary to see big tech CEOs just completely working in lockstep with the CDC, the NIH, and all those people. And then it's not like it hasn't stopped. It's seemingly now it's like more, you know, it's in the public now. Now Mark Zuckerberg is dining at the White House. You know, we have big tech CEOs from Palantir, Meta, and OpenAI joining the military as lieutenant colonels, you know. So I wish that it was something that we could vote our way out of, but it almost seems inevitable that there is going to be this merger of tech and state.
The merger of tech and state. We'll need a new ism term for that. So, all right, because it goes beyond fascism at that point. It's like total control. So that's the problem space. On the solution side, you've come up with at least a way to begin clawing some of that sovereignty back, if you will. So let's go there. Let's talk about the above phone.
Yeah, Chris. Well, I'm really honored to be sharing this with you and everyone who's watching. And this is a project that I am standing on the shoulders of giants. There are thousands of people who have been waking up to this surveillance paradigm, and they've been working on solutions. And so right now, there are alternative operating systems, alternative software you can install on your phone to ensure that it makes zero connections to big tech. And so I've got one of these phones with me. You know, this uses a de-Googled operating system called Graphene OS, which is really great. I would say it's the most private and secure phones that consumers can buy. And there is data to back that up. And so one of the main things it does is what it doesn't have, which is that command and control network these big tech companies have, where they can install apps on demand. If they release a contact tracing update, which Google and Apple did back in, what was it, 2021, they can release this and just have it automatically update on your phone. And it's been proven that they did that in Massachusetts. It's been proven they have the power to take apps off of your phone. So the first thing this phone does is it doesn't have any attachment to these big tech services by default. Now, you might be asking the question, well, can I still use my service on it? Well, yeah, this actually works on any service you might want to use. And so you could plug in a SIM card to it. You can use an eSIM. So it'll still work around the world. And so I've got this real phone in front of us, and I can demo to you the different things it does. It can even give you access to private app stores. So for instance, the Google Play Store, that might be where you get all your apps, for the Apple App Store. You can actually still get apps from those app stores, at least the Google Play Store. And the way it works is it uses anonymous Google accounts. It pools them together for many, many people. So you can use this phone without having to sign into anything or without having to sign off on any terms and conditions, which is amazing. Now, if you do install these apps on your phone, you have to know that even though this phone does increase your privacy, you're still making a connection directly to Instagram, right? Or directly to Snapchat. But I just want to show you one thing that makes this phone so great, which is the ability to have informed consent of what is actually going in your phone. So here's this app. I don't know anything about it, really. I just use it as an example. I'm not saying to install this app, but so you get information about this app. On a normal app store, it tells you, all right, ratings, reviews, all right, that's great. But what about my privacy? So if you scroll down, you can actually see what other companies exist in this application that have their code in their application. And you see that there are 30 different companies, and it will list them out for you, what software they have noticed and identified from these companies. So imagine 30 different companies on an application: Amazon advertisement, Smato, Facebook Share, Google, a Yandex, even a Russian company, right? This app is probably making boatloads of money from having all these advertising services in it. So one, you get to make better choices for yourself. You start to get to make better choices for yourself in that, hey, all right, I wanted a chat application, but I'm going to install the one that doesn't have any trackers on it. So that's one really powerful thing. Another powerful thing is that there are app stores where the software is completely open source. We can go to F-Droid. And so the rules for this app catalog is all the software needs to be open and transparent to people. So all the advertising and analytics we were looking at in the popular app store, that doesn't even exist. There's simply no way to. So there's actually many different solutions that you can start to use. And we have them all installed. We have the best apps. We've audited them. We all have them all ready to use on the above phone. So there's things you can do to watch YouTube and podcast and look at your photos. Here's our photo viewers. Right. There's and you can really get an experience that is not just similar, but better than a normal phone.
That phone itself, the device, was that built special, or is it just a regular phone that just has a different operating system on it?
Yeah. So the hardware is existing hardware that you can buy. It's actually using a Google Pixel series of phones. So it's kind of interesting. It's like, well, you're trying to de-Google, but you are using a Google series phones, and there are many reasons for that. One, it works so well because the hardware is meant to support Android, which is kind of the foundation for Google's Android, but also for these alternative operating systems. And the reason that is because Apple does not let anyone touch their software. No one knows how to fork or how to create another version of iOS. They simply don't let anyone. So ironically, Google is the most open because they let people at least use the foundation. So that's how this works. And so they've taken that foundation and they've stripped all the Google out of it because it is open source, and they've replaced it with more security and privacy features. And so the hardware is also has security features that you wouldn't find on other phones and ones that the operating system is actually using. And I'll try not to get too technical, but basically there are many layers of this phone that are ensuring that every app that is running, every process that is running is strictly confined to its own section of data. Right? It can't go out and look at other things. No, it's strictly confined and it's constantly erasing memory. So it is preventing malware. It's preventing unknown vulnerabilities. It's preventing people using, you know, getting their hands on their phone and trying to pull your data off to it. So there are a lot of security improvements that go into this solution.
And so if I heard you right, sorry, Apple users, people who are addicted to their Apples, I do have Macintosh products here just because for certain reasons, but I've been a non-Apple person ever since I felt like they were abusing me as a customer by constantly changing like the ports and the charging thing. It just felt abusive. Like it felt really like anybody who abuses customers is not somebody I want to do business with. So I've always been a little salty about that. You know, but also within the Macintosh structure, I am a more of a PC guy because I'm a little bit of a control freak. I like hitting Control Alt Delete and seeing which processes are running and being able to select. And Apple makes that very hard. They're like, "Oh no, kind citizen, we'll choose your experience for you. You have no control here."
No, you nailed it. It's actually funny. I use the same word to describe these ecosystems. I call them abusive software ecosystems because they treat you like an abusive partner. They are snooping on you. They're straight up lying to you. They're gaslighting you. Not like, "Oh, we know best for you. Hey, we already changed this on the back end. Don't worry about it. It's like the optimal setting." So abusive is a really good way to put it. And if you are a control freak, which I think that, I won't use the freak version, but if you like to be in your own authority,
yes.
Then this is a really cool phone because it allows you to customize everything. And I think that's really important. You know, that's this other aspect to this with it's not just a surveillance aspect, but the technology we use actually can make us dumber or smarter. I'll give you an example of this. This is a mapping application that comes on the above phone. And what it lets you do is to navigate completely offline, which is really cool. So you can put the phone on airplane mode. And I've done a trip around the country, up and down the East Coast with this map alone. And so basically, if I zoom out, you'll see that the entire United States is highlighted in green. I've already downloaded that to my phone. See, Canada is not highlighted in green. And so I can navigate freely. And as long as there are GPS satellites, I don't need to be connected to the internet, which is really, really cool. And so you can see in here in Nashville, I use this as an example, you can actually add your own points to the map. So I was in Nashville and I was looking at the farmers markets and good places to forage. And the next few years is going to be us basically rebuilding the data we need from these platforms. Because Google is going to continue. It's, you know, the same thing you experienced on YouTube, we will experience on Google Maps. I'm sure of it. So there are different solutions you can use to take back control of your device. And so these open source maps are a big part of it. So that's just one example of the type of control you have. There's also things like YouTube, which I will load up your channel here. And so this is a private version of YouTube. It basically minimizes Peak Prosperity. Of course, when Peak doesn't come up. All right, Peak Prosperity. There we are. A nice looking channel there. And so what's really cool, Chris, is that you're also transforming the relationship you have with your content. So now if I want to watch Chris's videos, I can actually download the audio directly to my phone. So I'll do this. If I go on a road trip, you know, I'll download the audio and I'll just listen it to the car, so I'm not having the cellular radiation in the car. But these are just some of the ways, like, you're actually expanding the amount of stuff you have access to.
Oh, that's incredible. Well, we're recording this, it looks like it's December 4th, and I know Christmas is coming up, and I think you mentioned before we started recording that you're running a special right now, and I'd just like to let people know about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we just wrapped up with our Black Friday sale, and we are heading into our Christmas sale. So I'm going to bring this up. It's going to be a little blown up on the screen. So if you go to abovephone.com/peak, you will see a page that looks similar to this. It'll be updated for the holidays. And here are the bonuses you're going to get. So we've been stocking up all year, like animals ready for this hibernation period. Mm-hmm. And so we've got deeply discounted phones up to $500 off. This is a really good opportunity. If you have someone in your family who also cares about privacy, or maybe your son or daughter or a parent, you can actually get an extra saving if you purchase two phones. And this is the most private way to communicate. There are so many things I haven't talked about yet, and such as the encrypted messaging, the alternative to FaceTime that you can start using. So you can get your whole family into a more private realm. We also have a suite of software services. These are optional. They're not necessary, but they're highly recommended because they do that last layer of your privacy, like, for instance, the VPN, which will encrypt your internet traffic, or your email, which is a private email, or the video conferencing, right? So you get your first month of the suite for free. You get an extra month of suite. And you also, the thing we try to do with our products is to make sure that people have the human resources they need to use them. So we actually, this is like a third of our company, which is just dedicated. They have their schedule is fully booked out, and we sit with you on a call for about an hour, and we help you migrate, because Apple and Google don't make this very easy. They don't want you to leave, right? So we're there to hold your hand and make it easier for you and transfer your data and all those things. So this sale, I would recommend if you want it in time for Christmas. We do have a bit of a shipping deadline. This interview might be going out after that period, but if you want to get it early, make sure to check out the phones, and I'll just go over the phones really quick. We have this 9 series, which I highly recommend. These are deeply discounted, and these are our next generation phones. They're actually supported till after 2030, so you have updates till 2031 or 2032, so you'll survive Agenda 2030, and you'll still be private. And then we also have our laptop, which this is our laptop. Let me see if I can do this. This is our new laptop. And what is really exciting about this laptop, we call it the Quantum series of laptops because it comes with an integrated GPU, or a discrete. It's actually got a graphics unit inside the computer. And what this lets me do is I can now access local AI. Some people might have different feelings about this. I was a big skeptic of AI for a very long time. And then more recently, I started to see the power of it when a friend, Mike Adams, he created this AI that was trained on self-sufficiency and survival information. So for instance, if I wanted to ask it, hey, I'm looking to dig a well on my property, can you provide me some advice? It will actually start to make you a comprehensive guide on digging a well, like how to locate the best spot on your land, what you need to buy, what you need to do if you're going through the public, zoning and all that kind of stuff. So it's really, really nuts, the technology we have access for. We just need more builders. So this is one of the features. If you end up getting a Quantum series laptop, it'll be preloaded with this awesome AI. And if you want to learn more about that AI and even get it on your computer, I'll come back to this question, but you can go to BrightU. BrightU.com. You could go to Brightian.ai or BrightU.ai, and you can actually download this model. You can just, it's several gigabytes, and if you've ever worked with a local AI, it's pretty easy to set up on your computer. But if you get this laptop, it's already pre-run. We already have it ready for you to use, so you can start asking it questions like this. Now, last thing before I come back is, like, imagine having an internet shutdown or having large parts of the internet being taken down. The information you still have access to, right? You just need to keep this laptop powered, and you still have access to so much information. That's kind of the beauty in some of these solutions. So it's this aspect of taking the weapons that are being developed and turning them into tools that I think is really important.
When you say keep it powered, you mean don't put it to sleep even, or?
Oh, I just mean that the battery needs to be charged. As long as you have power, you know, you can keep this thing running.
Okay, but it's not like you lose access to, so there's not some RAM aspect of this that has to go back and download if you shut it down.
No, yeah, it can be completely off the grid.
Oh, that's really cool. That's really cool. I've been wondering how to solve that problem. I mean, here's the fun part. So you can feel that they're pushing us all into this digital universe, and that's just how it's going to be, and it's inevitable, and we're all going to like live this digital life. But what if you have a coronal mass ejection, or there's some sort of a cyber war that happens, and if we're all fully dependent and dedicated to this, and it goes offline, wow, you have no resilience in that function. And I'm one of them. Like, if I need to fix my tractor, I look up a repair how-to video right on the spot. If that went down all of a sudden, I'd be really bummed, to be honest.
No, it's you got it spot on. Like, in coronal mass ejection, yes. If that happens, which is, it's likely to happen, it's very likely that we could see one in our lifetime. If that happens, are you prepared? And you can either stock up and have a huge library, or, you know, you could take a few minutes out of your day and download this model, and then you have it. No one can take it from you. And that's really powerful. And we're just starting, right? This is, I think, the first AI of its kind that's trained. It's trained on millions of pages of natural health information as well. I think there's other solutions we need, like actual plant identifications that I think we'll see in the next year or so, which is really exciting. But yeah, it made me think of when you were talking about your tractor. ChatGPT has like this billboard where it's like a young couple fixing a car, and it's just like, yeah, ChatGPT, it'll teach you how to fix it. Well, you know, there's other solutions too. You don't have to be tied to Sam Altman and Bill Gates. So,
I like that. That's really cool.
So, and actually another thing I'll mention is that this actually works on the phones too. Excuse me while I flip around the cameras. So let's see. So if you get a phone here, we can actually start a chat with the phone. It takes a lot longer. I won't even start a question. It takes like a minute or two to start up. But I was asking it this question the other day. What percentage of the population is needed to pull out of their money out of the banks for the bank's clacks? Actually, you're a great guy to ask this question. Is this too far?
No. This is great.
No. So the Enoch AI says 10 to 15% of depositors simultaneously, and is basing it on a 2008 liquidity crunch. What do you think this number is? Just, I'm curious.
It's actually a lot smaller than that now, because there are no reserve requirements, and there haven't been any for a while. March 26, 2020, the Federal Reserve officially eliminated all reserve requirements. So zero is the correct number of banks having reserve. So now it's kind of a floating number. It depends what their actual reserve ratios are. It's tiny, you know, compared mm-hmm. to deposits. I think it's down about 1 to 2% off the top of my head. So technically, it doesn't take a lot to sort of run that out. The fractional reserve is like super fractional right now.
This is something I was thinking about, during the government shutdown. And I was talking to some of the TSA agents, man. They were having like the worst month of their lives. Like half of the TSA just were sick. They weren't even showing up. And the other TSA agents, they were super grumpy. And they're like, I haven't gotten paid in a month. Like, I don't know if I'm going to do this. And in my heart, I felt a sympathy and empathy for them. And then I realized, like, wow, this surveillance grid is so fragile, isn't it? Just a few weeks of missed paychecks. So, and then again, seeing it here, this is so fragile, isn't it? If we took a direct concerted action, it could just fall apart. And that might be scary at first, but this is an illusory system falling apart that I think we'll see very soon.
Well, and this is an important point for me, because it's actually a faith-based system. Like, as long as we all have faith that it continues, we continue with it. And various monetary and fiscal authorities have been doing everything they can to undermine that faith, if not destroy it. I'm not sure if it's on purpose. It feels intentional, because how could you be unintentionally this awful this many times in a row? But, you know, maybe they're just clue bags. I can't fully discern that. But they're breaking the trust in a faith-based system, which I think people need to be aware of, because this faith-based system is actually a complex system. And complex systems have a couple of features, but one of them is they can put up with some stresses to a point, and then they undergo a critical transition, and they go into a new state, right? Which could be the U.S. dollar suddenly loses all international value, and who knows what that means. It could be that, you know, systems can't communicate. I've talked about this with respect to something called the Great Taking, which is all this legal language in, you know, in the universal, the UCC, the commercial code, and also titles in at the Federal Register level, which are all about if the system's plumbing seizes up, what do we do? Surprise, they take all your stuff, right? Who knew, right? Same old answer. So there's so many reasons to understand that we have both a very robust but also potentially fragile system. And it's very important to be A, aware of that, but then know what you can do about it. It's why I preach resilience and planting a garden and gaining skills, knowing your community. But this sounds like at least now I was unaware that you could just download this and have that much information now resident on a laptop is very compelling to me.
Yeah, I'll introduce you to Mike. He's a very powerful builder who was just, he's just creating solutions. And, you know, I think that I'm inspired by that. And I would like to pass that on to people of all ages. It's like, we really need to work together. We need to think creatively. We don't have as many resources as these billion-dollar companies, but we have each other. And there's a lot of power in that. Maybe assisted by things like these AI tools and also experts like human knowledge apprenticeship, we need to relearn all of these basic societal skills. And so I think that's what this next year is going to look like. This is kind of a good segue into talking about digital ID. I don't know about you, Chris, but this year, 2027, it seems very, very significant. I see it all the time in digital ID regulation as where this new, where digital ID will be accepted everywhere. It's that way in the EU. It's that way in Australia. It's that way in a few other countries. And I think that, like you were saying, you know, the system is fragile and it's going to go through this rate-taking process, and then it's going to turn into something new, which will probably be central bank digital currency or something of the like. So we kind of feel the lean that way. And it's really important to have a real genuine network, not based on dependence on them. So for me, that year feels like 2027 is when big shifts are going to start to happen.
I can't disagree with the timing. Certainly we know that somebody put 2030 on the calendar a long time ago. It's round number. Might be right, might not be, but I have the sense, and maybe other people have this, that events are speeding up. Like, I'm a really fast processor and I'm an information scout, and I've made a whole life out of just staying on top of what's happening. I can't stay on top of it all anymore. It's just going too quickly. And in particular, you know, the EU is blazing ahead with both the CBDC and a digital ID. You know, we have Mexico just announced a digital ID. Of all the things Mexico needs, I guess they needed a digital ID, on and on. So it feels like this has been a, like you said, it's a push, a lean. Yeah, there's some real muscle behind this move. Somebody really wants a lot of digital IDs. I think it's about control. I think it's just, frankly, it's about controlling people, because if I'm a control freak, these people are control freaks on steroids. But maybe I've misread this. That's how I see it right now.
I will add things to my my discussion of the 2027 date. And part of the reason why I think that is by reading the legislation and seeing what Mexico is doing, and knowing the EU is they're making cryptocurrency just straight up illegal in 2027. That's why that date comes to be important. But I researched all of the digital ID programs on the planet. I won't say all of them, but at least many of them in every continent. And so that report is available at abovephone.com/digitalid. We also have an article, I think we did, on it.
That's a great, by the way, that's a great, people should download that and read that. That's really a good report.
Thank you. That means a lot coming from you. And yeah, and I mean, it's kind of scary, but you have to see that there's nowhere you can run. Like Chris was saying, like Mexico. Yeah, it's happening in Mexico too. I mean, Mexico seems to be ahead of the game, where they're just telling people, hey, you won't be able to get a cell phone or get Wi-Fi or get your internet service if you don't have this digital ID. And so the timelines, so, you know, it's happening in the poorest parts of the world. It's happening in Africa. And where is it coming from? Well, the World Bank is the one that funded Mexico's digital ID pilot. They gave them $200 million. And they gave Nigeria $430 million to go out into some of the poorest villages and start taking biometric pictures of people. There's, you know, people, many people in Africa don't even have phones. So they're not even, they're just like, all right, skip the phone thing. Let's just get them an electronic ID card. So no matter where you look, it's happening everywhere. This is another global, global technocratic agenda. And I think it's like it's COVID happening again, but this time it has the potentiality of weaving its way into every aspect of your life, unless you start building alternatives now.
Well, that's very well said, and I'm just suspicious because, you know, I'm this guy. I believe technology is great. I like GPS, right? It's wonderful. Use it all the time, but it always has this other side that isn't really well understood, right, until later, right? So we found out, oh, we introduced GPS. This is the greatest thing. People can navigate Boston, one of the worst cities to find your way around in. But, uh-oh, just to the south in Gloucester, fishermen are now able to fish, you know, sail out 6-7 hours where they used to dead reckon and drop their net 6 inches to the left of where they left off yesterday, and it destroyed the fisheries, right? So there's two sides. I think we're just starting to figure out now that it's terrifying what's happening, to me at least, to kids, right? Because they're on their phones, they're tracked like crazy, they're open to all kinds of new scams and predators, but not even just it's some bad guy in a wife beater in Pakistan, you know, scamming them. It's that the companies are abusively ruining their dopamine circuitry, hooking them on these things so they can sell them stuff. I don't know, but we're just starting to find out now that the kids who grew up under that regime have some deficits now. So it's always two sides, and we only talk about the awesome stuff that can happen. Look at what we can do with this digital ID. And then there's the dark side. And I just feel like till those things are resolved, I want to be as insulated from that as possible.
Yeah, that's spot on. It's like the surveillance is one aspect, but the more powerful aspect is the mind control. And we were talking about X earlier, right? How this news feed is constantly coming at you. You're constantly in a space of fight or flight, and you can't think clearly. And that's all by design. You know, all of our technology is designed to keep us hooked into it. I mean, there's people who argue even the frequencies, the blue light spectrum, the specific waveform coming from the screens are designed to make us more docile. Which would explain when you give a baby a phone, they're just like, they're just completely connected to it.
Yeah.
And then you see the tantrums, which is crazy, right? It's like you gave the baby crack or something. And this is something I care deeply about. As a child who grew up in this internet era, I had my first computer at 11, way too early. I went to some dark places. I had to nurse myself off of technology addiction. I still, you know, have one. It's just a part of my work now, but it's a very, very real threat. So I would say that if I'm going to be a parent some point, and I would not give my kids a phone until they were ready, right? Until they had developed their mind enough to understand the relationship to have with technology.
Keep going.
I just want to mention, yeah, so we are working on things to have better technology for the health, to deal with the blue light on the screens, the radiation, and also a phone that will contain this personalized AI you're talking about. Like, cause parents have kids that are growing up, they just want to stay in contact. That's all the phone really needs to do. And if it can do that, fine. It doesn't need to do all the AI, all the apps, all that bad stuff. So we're working on that stuff. Yeah.
All right. So I have an app on my current phone called Twilight, which just makes it red. Does that do it, or do we have to go further than that to take the blue light away?
Twilight, yep. So we have a night light on the above phone. It gets really dark.
looks like that, nice and red.
So this is what they call a, you know, color temperature, and it does take away the power of the blue light, but there's still blue light coming off of this OLED screen, and these OLED screens are like super, super powerful. So unless you're wearing red light glasses, you know, it's still affecting you. I wouldn't like use it as a free pass. All right, well, now I can use my phone, but don't do that. Wear the glasses. Some people have screen protectors and stuff that they use, but even here in the studio, this new light I'm using now, I switched to a full spectrum LED, and now I can talk for hours. Before, I was getting pretty loopy. So can you do something about it? Yes, and I think I learned this from Dr. Jack Cruz. He's the one who's been talking about biophysics, and you just need to make sure you balance it with a lot of outdoor time. Or you can be like him and hang out shirtless and have your office outdoors.
I routinely take my sunglasses off. Like, it just snowed the other day here in Massachusetts, so it's very bright out. And normally, I just cover up. Now I'm like, let it come on in, you know? just give me that natural light. I want to go back to something, too, which is near and dear to my heart. You mentioned it before, encrypted messaging. So I use Signal under the theory that at least it's encrypted, but I don't honestly know what backdoors exist or how deep the NSA has already corrupted it. I don't know. Talk to me about encrypted messaging. What's available and how secure is it, actually?
Yeah, absolutely. So you're like Signal, like, it made everything really easy. Unfortunately, Signal is funded indirectly by the U.S. government. So it's through the U.S.
Surprise.
Department of Media. Yeah, exactly. Surprise. And that's why Edward Snowden, you know, contractor for Booz Allen Hamilton, he's like, yeah, guys, NSA is spying on everything. But hey, here, let's use this project from, you know, funded by our government. And also let's use Tor, which is created by the U.S. Navy. So the government realized a long time ago it's better to co-opt these movements, and so they did. But yet we ignore technologies like XMPP. Some people might remember this as Jabber. That name aged really badly, but it's still this technology still works today. In fact, WhatsApp, I learned recently, is still built off of this. They pretended like they moved off of this. So what XMPP is, it's a messaging protocol. Anything you can do in WhatsApp or Telegram or Signal, you can do on XMPP. And the most powerful part about this is that it is free and open source. So anyone can run their own server. We run a professionally hosted server. And so if you have people on XMPP, you can see that I can call them if I have an XMPP contact. Let me see. Robert Paulson. There we go. So if I wanted to video call someone, I could, right? I can send files. I use this to send PowerPoints and stuff to myself on my demo devices. So you can actually do anything a normal messaging app can. So you sign up. Anyone can run their own server. If you get above Suite, which is our suite of privacy services, when you go to check out on our devices, you can see you have the option for it. You automatically will get an account. You'll be able to register for an account on our XMPP server. But if you wanted to sign up to one online, you could go to, what is it? XMPPproviders.net. Is that it? Providers. Providers.xmpp.net. And it's really cool because it tells you all the different servers that you can use. Free. And these are all free. These are all free. We charge for our XMPP service simply because it's like in a family of different software services we run, but you can do it for free and you can see what, where it's at, what language the server is in. So this is something that is free and available to everyone. You don't need to go through a giant big tech company. And all the servers, when you sign up for an XMPP service, they federate. So it's kind of like how email used to be, you know, used to have like Hotmail and it could talk to Yahoo. So there's that built into it. And what's really cool about it is you can do the end-to-end encrypted messaging and all that kind of stuff. So I think that even though very possibly the NSA could break into anything, and they might be able to break into it, but they'll have to target it, right? That's the thing. It's the difference between a mass surveillance that people opt into or consent into because they're using something like iMessage or Google Hangouts versus running your own server. And then eventually you can't target everyone who's just doing their own thing. You could target an individual, but to do that at a mass scale is very, very hard. You can't, there's not enough manpower. There's not enough resources. So that's what I think it's going to be. It's doing our own thing and they will exhaust themselves. They can crack into my messages. What are they going to see? They're going to see I'm bartering some eggs for like a phone or something. Congrats, guys. Really, really showing, you're really cracking down on crime. So solutions like these are available on the Above phone. And then for people coming from the iPhone world, this is how you'll replace FaceTime. So this is a software called Jitsi. And so you can see I can hop onto this video call here and I can send a link out to anyone. And so you don't need an Above phone to use this. You don't even need anything installed. You can just join from your web browser. So it's like very Zoom-esque. You can share your screen, join in groups, and all that kind of stuff.
Well, that's great. So, again, if you want to take back some of your digital sovereignty and begin to opt out of this surveillance architecture that's only gaining steam at this point in time, go to abovephone.com. And it sounds like it. I mean, I have an Above phone. So just be very clear about this. I think it's a great product. Hakeem, thank you so much for doing it. Thank you for your time today. And it's great to know that you got people there to help people go through the learning process and transfer things from phone A to phone B. And I know there'll be a lot of people who are interested in this. So thanks for that.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah, thank you for sharing your wisdom and your insights. And here's to building a better world.